You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, we're going to have a conversation that goes from home inspecting all the way to long-term hold with a little great advice for my first-time buyers right in the middle. Tommy Haar is with us today. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
So tell me a little bit about Tommy's life, Tommy's world. What do you do in and around real estate? Where are you located? Give us the backstory.
Sure. Yeah, I'm in Columbus, Ohio, born and raised. I'm 29 years old. I got in the game as a home inspector with my dad when I was 23. So been in the game for now 6-7 years. Doesn't seem like it's been that long, but time flies by. And as time went on, after a home inspector, I started doing inspections for investors, saw the flippers and the wholesalers and saw how much money they were making, the lifestyle they were living, and decided that's what I wanted to pursue. So now I have a business that we wholesale, we do flipping, we own about 70, 75 rental properties, we manage them all in-house and kind of fully integrated our business.
You might be the first one of the wholesaler, flipper, investor types that I've met who manages in-house. I want to start with that angle because that's the biggest collection of headaches on the planet is in property management for the lowest margin, but a lot of people provide that more for the piece of concierge service than for making it a huge benefit. So how did you land in that space? Is it because you were managing your own pieces or you saw a flaw in the market? I'd like to dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, so it kind of started as necessity. So my first property that I owned was a duplex. I did a FHA house hack. So I lived in one unit, rented out the other. So I became an accidental landlord. Not accidental. I did it purposefully.
And You did the smartest thing possible. Can we just stop there for a second?
Yeah.
The absolute smartest way possible to get into home ownership. And holy crap, that's what I want to respond with. All these little whiny people on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter. I can't buy anything. I'm like, did you look at buying a duplex somewhere and doing it the most efficient way possible? But I digress. So yay, you five, Tommy, high five.
I did that twice. So my first one, I did a lot of work myself. I fixed it up. A year later, it was worth $100,000 more than what I paid for, refinanced out of my FHA loan and did it again two blocks up. So the first one, I rented out all my bedrooms and lived in my living room. So I did it the hard way, sacrificed a lot because I knew it was going to be worth it long term. And was making money while I lived in it.
I mean, be still my beating heart. All right. So you're also ethical here because you refinanced out of your FHA so that you would not violate the terms of your loan. And hello, friends. Can y'all please pay attention to that? There are a lot of people out there that hear about this strategy and then they literally violate the terms of their loan agreement and just haven't gotten called due. So thank you for doing it the right way. But I also love this message of renting out all the bedrooms and living on the couch to make a short-term sacrifice for long-term gain. And you're only 29. Yeah. You are already so far ahead of the bulk of your generation, not because somebody handed it to you, but because you said, you know what, I can suck this up for a short amount of time and power through so that you can get somewhere different. So I want to know, when you looked at that first change, so the first duplex, a lot of people do the first one, and then they don't know what to do next. They get very strung out because the idea of transitioning from the first one to the second one can be overwhelming. What did you learn in the first transition process? And what was the biggest piece of advice you would give to the next person who wants to follow in your footsteps?
Good question. So the first one I bought, it needed work. So I had just flipped my first house. We can kind of get into that stuff. And I made $25,000 and I used all that money to fix the house up. So I was able to get the FHA loan, but I did not buy turnkey. So I bought a house that was mechanically functional, but it needed paint, floors, kitchen, things that I could do, windows, some siding. So it forced the value. So I knew that that was going to happen. So a year later is worth $100,000 more and I refinanced out. So I knew that was going to be the plan going in and I wanted to refinance out so I could use my FHA loan again. So I like to think about home ownership, especially back then, because I didn't have much money. How can I own and control these assets with as little capital as possible? And the FHA loan for me, because I didn't serve in the armed forces and the 5% conventional wasn't a thing at the time, I needed that FHA loan to make it happen. So that was the whole thought process around it. And then also renting my rooms out and getting paid to live in the house was me getting rid of my mortgage and my monthly payment to be able to create my side hustle while I was being a home inspector with my dad building his business, which was going to be wholesaling. So I started wholesaling, making a little bit of money, and that helped me save up for my next down payment. So it was all kind of maybe a little lucky, but I listened to so many podcasts, Bigger Pockets specifically, to where that's what they said you needed to do. And I was like, okay, these guys, real estate, you don't recreate the wheel. So I was like, okay, if these guys say it, they have a giant platform for a reason. I got to follow this.
Okay. So in the wholesaling space, there is a pretty big divide. There are some ethical wholesalers, and there's a whole bunch that are scheming to make money regardless of the outcome. And I'm just going to take a wild guess here based on everything you said. You've chosen an ethical wholesaling pathway. So my question to you is, as the markets have changed since COVID era started 4 years ago, has it been harder to find wholesaling opportunities? And when you find them, how do you address this conversation of where equity has gone and what you're able to bring to the table? Because I think there's some missing pieces with a lot of the people looking at wholesaling right now.
Sure. So, I mean, to kind of answer the second question first is, if you want to be a real wholesaler and make money and have longevity and have be able to lay your head on your pillow and sleep at night knowing you did the right thing, is finding the people that have a real problem that you have a solution to. So letting them know that in your first exploratory call with them, because they're talking to you for a reason. So there's motivation underlying that you may not know about. So my job as a wholesaler is to figure that out and solve it the right way. So if my solution to their problem is a quick cash solution, and that's truly what they need, then I can provide that. But if they want the most equity out of their house, then I can refer them to a realtor and I'm not the best solution. And I would tell them that the first call. So we leave it all on the table and we say, hey, we're maybe not a good fit. Or if they want top dollar for their house, I'm not going to try and lowball them if that's what they want. But not everybody's going to fit into that bucket. So you just got to find the people that truly need that solution that you have.
So I love that your sense of curiosity is allowing you to really personalize the answers, which I think is frankly the key to everything in real estate. But so often, the message we hear about real estate is always top dollar, top dollar, top dollar. And I've been fighting that for a long time because for so many people, there are other driving influences that have nothing to do with top dollar. And you've referenced that in saying that there are some people that's not their primary motivation. And so if you're offering a wholesale solution, can you give us some of the examples for those skeptical people out there watching and listening? They're saying, Lee Brown, everybody wants top dollar. They're not right. So give them some examples of what causes people to be glad for less than full market value when you have that conversation with them.
That's a great question. So, I mean, we train our team. Price a lot of the time is secondary, believe it or not. So in the retail market, price is first and foremost for everybody. But we're trying to get past price. We don't even try and talk about price with people for the first call or two, unless they come out and say it right away. Just because everybody has a problem. So the problem is, it could be their spouse died or their parents died, or they're a hoarder and they don't want somebody to walk through their house. They're embarrassed of the house. There's so many scenarios that we've ran by. And honestly, it'll blow your mind because there's thousands of motivations, tax liens. They may have inherited the house 15 years ago and it's been sitting vacant and they just don't want to think about it anymore or whatever. I mean, there's so many options.
I'm glad you mentioned that because especially for the viewers and listeners, if you're in traditional retail real estate, what Tommy's talking about are the scenarios you may never actually get to see. And there are houses where there is an enormous amount of embarrassment to even call a realtor because you people have made yourselves look so fancy and unattainable that the neighbor down the street who's having a hard time would rather call a regular dude who's a wholesaler who they don't feel is going to judge them. So just take a step back sometimes with the way that you look at your neighbors with real estate. And I love this, that you have 1,000 different problems out there that have a solution. And so you also mentioned that you've got a team working with you to find these neighbors that need your kind of solution, not necessarily a traditional real estate experience. Where did you put that team together and how do you train them to have your same mindset that is that customer first, ethical way to look at the best way to approach somebody else's problem? And by the way, the profit comes later. So how do you build a team that mirrors you?
Yeah, so we built a team organically. So it's me and a business partner. We didn't have an office. Then we got an attic of a friend's office space. And we've grown from there just completely organically from nothing. Now we have about 10 team members between our companies. So with our wholesaling business, I mean, if you're not solving the problem, you're not getting paid. So if you teach them that first, you can't force somebody to sign on the dotted line and you can't force somebody to sell their house, especially at a discount. So if you can't find the problem and be the actual solution, sit back and listen to these people, because most people, when they one, they don't know about real estate much. They hear wholesaling and they want to get on the phones right away. And the first thing they jump to is price. It's like, hey, if you guys are jumping to price first, the highest and best dollar they're going to get at all times is going to be calling a realtor. So learning that there's another thing there and sit in their shoes and start thinking why and reasons as they're saying things, you got to make inferences and kind of guess as they're going through. It's part of our sales process to do that, but you're just not getting paid unless you actually sit in their shoes and listen to them.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime while also managing sky-high fuel cost at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now, and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link, www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content.
I mean, that's what I wrote down, because you have a really great quote there that if you're not solving the problem, you're not getting paid. I'm totally stealing that. I might give you credit if I remember, but I can't promise that either because... older than you are. Here's a question for you. You're talking about the benefits and your success came after you treated people well and after you approached things thoughtfully. In the wholesale space, and I'm going to totally broad brush and generalize here, the bulk of what we see from wholesale advertisers and from educational programs, which are almost in that Carlton Sheets kind of a mindset of make a zillion dollars at 3 a.m., they only talk about the money. So do you think that you are an outlier in the wholesale business, or have you just been shouted over by the really aggressive influencer types?
I mean, I got into it for the money. I mean, there's not so many businesses that you can pick up a phone. I mean, realtor would probably be one. You can pick up a phone, hustle, and make money kind of create out of nothing. You don't have to own the house. You don't have to do any of that. So if you're in a position to where maybe you're young like I was, and I was making 40 grand working for my dad, and I wanted more things. Wholesaling is a great way to completely change your active income stream and change your life. And also with wholesaling, to me, it's a means to an end. So you have to be ethical about it because one, you have a brand and you're a person. You don't want your name to be ruined. To me, wholesaling is deeper than that. Everything in real estate starts and ends with a deal. So if you can be the person that can find those deals, specifically wholesaling, because you're finding discounted off-market real estate, I want to own those assets. So I'm using it selfishly to find them and monetize them 3 ways. I can wholesale them to another investor, make money, solve the problem, or I could buy it, flip it, or buy it, fix it up, and rent it out on a refinance standpoint and keep the asset and have a portfolio that's going to change my family tree.
Okay, so you said that your goal now is to hold as much real estate as possible. At what point did your mindset transition from, let me find the wholesale deals, sell them to an investor? What caused the shift from, we'll just call it the quick return, to the long-term, more patient return? Was it the ability to buy them and hold them, or were you just having a mind shift?
When it turned from necessity to, because I needed money. So I was young. I was at one point living in my parents' basement still after college. So I needed money. I needed that cash. So the wholesaling was a necessity. But then after that, I always knew after I started learning about real estate that the passive income, I say that in quotations if you're living on there, or if you're watching online, but I really fell in love with the idea of building wealth for my family. I grew up middle class, but we never owned more than just our own house and all that stuff. So being able to create $200, $300, $400 every single month, no matter what you're doing, sounded amazing to me. So that was kind of what I fell in love with.
Okay. So as you talk about reaching out, doing your wholesaling, now you're holding and you're property managing, all still in Columbus where you grew up?
Yep. All in Columbus.
Okay. Have you ever had the scenario where in your wholesale business, the person your team talked to said, hey, we've got one here, Tommy, please talk to this one? Was somebody you knew, or was the family member that you, if somebody you grew up with? Have you had any of those life intersections? And how do you handle those when somebody didn't know was in trouble, is willing to talk to you because they're in trouble?
It's not really been any family, but I've had friends and specifically colleagues that come to me because they know that we do good business and we do the right thing. So they come to me and they say, hey, Tom, my aunt or something, they're about to get in foreclosure. They know that you can provide a cash solution. Can you help them out? And obviously we'll sit down with them and see if we're a good fit. And it's got to be mutually beneficial too, right? Like, I'm not going to buy it if I can't make any money at all. And I'm going to tell them that first call. It's like, hey, I'm not doing this for charity. I'm running a business. I have employees. I need to make something. So yeah, we get that not all the time, but sphere of influence and Facebook. I mean, everybody knows what I do and those come more than you'd think.
Kind of makes me glad for shows like Pawn Star, because if you watch any of those reality business shows, which obviously I binge on that, but when Rick is looking at somebody's item, it's always this, I have to make money too. And they kind of get that. So I'm grateful that that's in the general conversation now, thanks to TV, but it allows you to be honest at the same time without having to blow smoke at people. And they should know you need to make money, but still there's a very big sense of hoarding when it comes to our own financial resources. In real estate, we face that all the time. People want the service without paying for it, but you have to know how to draw the line. All right. So in your journey of doing all these different things, from home inspecting with your dad to doing the wholesale to investor path to the flip path to holding it long term, what's the single wildest thing you've seen that you couldn't wait to get out of there? And you probably called your dad and said, Dad, you're not going to believe what I saw today. What's the story?
Oh, man. I knew this question was coming. And there's so many because, and I didn't tell this part, but so my dad has a home inspection company. He's owned a franchise for 23 years, but I also grew up in a property preservation business, which he started. So for those of you that don't know what property preservation is, that's a little bit of an older term. In 08, 09, when everybody was getting foreclosed on, somebody had to come work boots on the grounds for the banks, meaning somebody had to clean the houses out, board them up, change the locks, winterize the houses. And my dad started that kind of business. So at the age of 12, 13, I started working for my pops doing that stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, so that's kind of how my brand came about. It's the real side of real estate, because I've seen everything. I mean, I've gotten into a house and gotten covered head to toe in fleas immediately. I've walked through houses that have every square inch of the floor covered in dog poop. We had a house that we bought that the lady hadn't been in it, and the tenants had probably 60 cats in there. The dude was sitting on the couch and he had roaches crawling up his arms and on his feet, cats on his head. It was wild.
Wait. The guy was sitting on the couch, like a living guy, had roaches crawling on him. He didn't know
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, he knew it. And then his daughters were in the kitchen. I felt so bad. They were grownups, though. So they were in their 20s, maybe 30s. And I walked through the kitchen. They were barefoot, roaches crawling over their feet, like really, really, really bad. We still own that house today, but one of the worst smelling and seeing houses I've ever seen. And then lastly, I always like to tell the story. I used to do inspections for investors for $75. That was my way to give value to people and get my name out there. And there was one where the house was a hoarder house. They had smoked in it so long that they had pulled pictures off the wall and you could see the outlines of it, all that good stuff. And I get into the basement. It's a cellar. It's an old 100-year-old house. And I start smelling. It smells like poop. And I go down. This is the last part of the house. So I walk down and I see 4 to 6 inches of standing human feces. And I'm like, gotta walk through it. I'm already this far in here. I gotta just go for it. So I walk through 6 inches of human poop for $75. That's probably the craziest, but it's definitely up there with a bunch of other ones.
Did your prices go up after that one? Because something tells me that you realized $75 was just not enough money to do that.
Yeah, you know, that one, I mean, the price for those was, it was kind of, there was a bigger purpose for me doing those, but
I think there's a bigger purpose, but dang, $75.
The price went up. Yeah, the price went up about a year or two after that, after I met everybody that I needed to meet and all that stuff. But it's usually when you, as a home inspector, you get out of like a really muddy crawl space that's about 2 foot deep and you're army crawling through it. And you get out, you're covered in cobwebs. You're just like, I look at my dad and I'm like, Dad, there wasn't any other better ways to provide for the family. Like, this is it. It's like, come on, there's got to be a better way.
Oh, and this is why you see there's primarily male-dominated home inspector, primarily female-dominated retail real estate.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So if there was one thing you would tell the listeners and viewers about your journey in real estate that you would go back and change today, whether it was timing, a purchase, a rule of thumb, what would you change about your trajectory so far? You have full leverage. You could get this magic fairy dust time machine. You can fix any one thing and you do it differently.
Yeah. So this one's twofold. So I wish it didn't happen, but I also am grateful it happened. The first deal I did, I bought with my uncle. I was 23 years old. We bought a 4,000 square foot house. It was our first flip together. First and only flip together, I might add. 4,000 square foot. nice area of Columbus, probably an A-class area, 6 beds, 5 bathrooms. We bought it for $425. We ended up losing $100,000 in 16 months on that flip. So I lived in the house. I went room to room. I did a lot of the rehab. I managed contractors. I didn't know what I was doing. So going back, I would tell myself to start with something easier, educate myself a little bit more. Don't get too antsy to buy your first deal. A lot of people will get way too excited about it and buy the bad deal, because once you buy it, you're on the hook financially. So making sure that you run your numbers right, maybe get a mentor, get conservative. And then kind of the twofold part of this is I wouldn't have traded it for the world, because it's taught me a lot of lessons. And as a 23-year-old kid that thought my, for lack of a better term, shit didn't stink, it taught me really quick that the real world can smack you in the face. And this stuff is real.
Well, and for a man who said his shit didn't stink, you got to walk through shit later. And I'd say that you have now come out of that phase in life. So we'll have to get a different name for the episode than that. But how can people reach out to you if they want to find out more about what you offer and what you're doing in this space? And what's the best way to find you?
Yeah, so primarily Instagram is the best way to reach out to me. I respond to all my DMs, give a lot of free content there, and my YouTube as well. But TommyHar05 is my Instagram. Would love to connect.
All right, friends, I'm going to have all of Tommy's contact information and channels in the show notes for this episode. So go link and follow along. If you learned something, drop a comment. And most importantly, thank you for being on the show, Tommy. Appreciate the conversation. And now I'm feeling kind of inspired to go buy something else myself.
Thank you so much. This was a great way to start my Friday morning. This was a lot of fun.
All right, guys, make sure you subscribe and we'll see you next time.
As always, I am so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you have some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.